3, 2, 1, 0. Launch commit. Liftoff. We have liftoff with Apollo 14. 3 minutes past the hour.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Elvis Presley died today. He was 42. Apparently it was a heart attack.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin. The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, by air. President Roosevelt has just announced.
I have a dream. My four little children one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Today we've had a national tragedy. Two airplanes have crashed into the World Trade Center.
Throughout history, there's always been your KBOW party line.
Right, my friends, throughout history, we've been here and brought to you each and every weekday by our broad list of party line sponsors, which today include Community Health Center, Duke and Dolan, Town Pump Incorporated, View Granite Works, Highland Hearing, Wild West Plumbing, Heating and Drain Service, The Sharps Restaurant, Broken Arrow Casino and Steakhouse, Harrington Surgical Supply, Hoyle Jewelry, Lenny's Bingo, Chances Are Malake, Shea Realtors, J&C Body Shop, at Crazy Carol's in South of the Hill, Bernina. All proud to bring you your KBOW party line. Appreciate you joining me this afternoon. My name's Dan Sheeran. Happy to be hosting your party line. And with us this afternoon, we have a gentleman by the name of Tim Martin. And we're going to learn a lot about Tim in the next hour. And probably, I guess in my mind, Tim, have one of the most interesting hours of party line in quite some time. Just by my reading thus far. So we're going to jump into all the details. But first, I'd like to learn a little bit about yourself, sir, please.
Thanks, Dan, for having me on. I sure appreciate the opportunity. I live over in Whitehall, and I'm active in our Covenant Community Church congregational life and work with the kids over there with the homeschooling and things like that. And worked on this book for many years. It's titled Beyond Creation Science, New Covenant Creation from Genesis to Revelation. And what I try to do with the book is sort of open up our understanding of what the Bible is all about. I'm one of those guys who believes the Bible is absolutely true, but I'm also one of those guys who questions a lot of what we've been told about the Bible. And so what do you do in that situation? Well, I got the bright idea one day to actually write a book about challenging some of the ways that people have traditionally read the Bible, and that's what the book is all about, understanding the story that the Bible tells from Genesis to Revelation.
Sure. You know, and something that you kind of explained to me and enlightened me a little bit about before we went on air, Tim, is the concept behind the book, is a look at it from when it was written, you know, almost the history of, rather than, how we interpret it these days. So maybe you can kind of put that out there to the same light you, I guess, it explained it to me.
Sure. Well, we tend to read the Bible very, very shallowly. We tend to read the Bible as if it's written directly to us, and it's talking about all the terms in the language that we know today in a particular culture in a particular setting as modern, Western, Americans in the 21st century. And we sometimes don't realize that the Bible wasn't written directly to us. It was written to very real people who lived at a certain point in time in history, and those people experienced who God was and what God did in their lives. And it's when we actually understand the story of the Bible in that context, that original context, that we actually start understanding the story better, and we can actually make better applications from that knowledge. So I tried to write the book from a lot of, I used the particularly the contemporary debate, the relevant debate of creation and evolution, and also the issues of biblical prophecy. You know, there's a lot of written that's about the end times, the second coming of Christ, the great tribulation. And what I did with the book is try to bring the beginning and the end of the Bible together to show what the Bible is really telling about, the story that the Bible is telling. And I think I had a challenge because I'm working against a lot of the popular conceptions of what the Bible is about in the beginning and what the Bible is about at the end. And I think what happens is because of those misunderstandings, we miss what the story is all about. And that was the idea behind the book.
Sure. You know, I guess in my reading, and like I said, I'll be the first to admit I haven't made it all the way through because it's one of the thickest books I've ever seen, Tim. This is literally, I mean, a lifetime, compilation here material-wise. But the parts that I've really been able to beat through, have given me, I guess, some kind of almost, an idea of how to look at it a little bit different. You know, that there's small details that can kind of spell things out, and I suppose that it, at any level, it's a matter of interpretation.
Right.
You know, but I really do feel like in a lot of ways it's cleared a couple things up, or at least given me some kind of, you know, intelligent, I guess, if you would, description of what's going on or what did go on.
Well, that's very encouraging that you said that. That makes the work, hard work worthwhile. But what we've got kind of in a situation here in modern American Christendom, in the church, is you have really two things going on that are very common. You have people who think of the Bible and Christian theology as something that's sort of trite, something that's extra to life, something that spices up life. So you have this normal life that we're all living, and then you can add, you know, a little religion on top and make things feel better, make life go better. It's sort of like having, you know, buying a car. You could buy like the leather seats version, be nicer. And there's another problem. Sometimes people react against that approach and say, well, no, the Bible and Christian theology is what tells us about every scientific detail in the universe. So we can know all about the beginning of the universe by reading Genesis, and we can know about how the universe is going to end by reading the book of Revelation. And so the whole Bible is taken and redirected into sort of a science textbook. And I think both of those opposing ideas tend to redirect or miss the meaning of the Bible, because first of all, you know, you read the stories in the Bible about people like Abraham, or if you read about Moses or Isaiah, they didn't think that their faith in God was something that was extra added. It was more real to them than anything else in their life.
Sure.
But also you realize that you know, they also didn't read the Bible or understand their covenant relationship, their friendship with God, in terms of, you know, a scientific textbook or anything like that. So what I try to do with the book, with Beyond Creation Science, is try to get back into the original context of what all these stories are about, and try to open up again, kind of in a fresh way, what the stories are all about in God loving and becoming a father to his people, and living with them in all the parts of life that they go through, in all the different things that they experience, and of course, being a God to us, and us as the people remaining faithful to God, because I think that's what the Bible is all about, and that's really where our faith comes into play, is into everything that we do. It's not really about the scientific details; it's about how we live out our lives in the image of God here today. And so, the book is kind of a deep book. It asks some of the deep questions, like you mentioned, kind of questions that human beings have been asking since the very beginning of time. You know, things like, who are we? Where did we come from? Where is history going? How should we live? What is right and what is wrong? How can we know these things? So it is a thinking book. You have to put your thinking cap on if you're interested in reading it. But for a lot of people, I think that's right up their alley. And for that audience, that's who I try to do the work with on the book.
Sure. You know, and I think, and again, this book is, as you put it, right up my alley. I'm one of those people that if I read something and it really grips me, I odds are I'm not sleeping about it for a week. You know, that's kind of where I've been. But it's been very enjoyable, and I think that's part of it. You know, it takes you outside of the norm, and boy, it really makes you think.
Well, that was what I intended with Jeff, my co-author, Jeff Vaughn. That was what our plan was. So it's, like I said, very encouraging to hear that kind of feedback.
You know, and I want to learn a little bit more about Jeff as well, and kind of the different, I guess, the process. You know, from you and I just talking before we came on air, it wasn't like you guys sat down and he took a notepad, you took a notepad, and just kind of smushed everything together. It's a process.
Well, right, and this book right that we have right now is actually the third edition. I began writing the first edition in 2001. And I've met a lot of friends along the way. People have like-minded interests in the Genesis debate or in biblical prophecy and things like that. And what we did was I kept writing and adding more material, studying and learning more. The first editions, I had people coming up to me and says, well, what about this? Well, what about that? And I didn't have any answers for them, because I presented some ideas about Noah's flood and things, and how that impacts, sort of changes our way of looking at Genesis. And they came up with all these questions, and I thought it was kind of rude to put them into a ditch and not give them any alternative. So that was the idea we kept working. And then I asked Jeff Vaughn, who lives in California. He's a PhD scientist in California. He works with deep space telescopes, and so he's very much oriented on the scientific side of things. So he brought a lot of ability, a lot of experience that I don't have. since I'm not a scientist. He compliments my work very well. I compliment his work very well. And we just became real good friends many years ago. And as he saw the book develop, he kept bringing so much material. I said, you know, you've got to come on board and actually help me pull this off, because this is a really big project.
And it is. You know, it's neat because I think there are so many different types of people, and I again, personally kind of fall into this. I am, you know, just a rare breed, I guess. I'm a guy of science. I understand things. I believe, you know, in lots of parts of biology, but evolution to me is insanity.
Right.
You know, and I guess that's my faith, you know, again, right, on the other side. So it's kind of an interesting mix, and I think that's a good fit for that kind of mentality, and it's made a lot of fun to dig into it. Maybe I can get you to talk about it in a little bit here. A couple different terms, you know, and you can almost classify yourself immediately as this type or that type or you know, a certain way of thinking. But I want to talk about the scope of the book. You know, is this something, you know, what overall, if you could, I guess, point at this, Tim, and say you wanted this to make a difference somehow, you know, how would it make a difference? And is it just here at home, or, I mean, are you looking globally? What's the scope? What are you trying to do?
Well, we're certainly looking beyond our local environment, and we've sold the book. I have a website up, beyondcreationscience.com, where people can take a look at what we've got. We've sold the book and shipped the book all over the world, South Africa, Australia, Japan, Switzerland, India, New Zealand, United Kingdom, and Canada. And people are very, it's interesting that there are people all over this world that have these kinds of questions, and we tend to think of ourselves as Americans, and we tend to think everybody thinks exactly like us Americans, but there's a big wide world out there, and there's a lot of people discussing issues of evolution and like creationism, and this book certainly falls on the creationism side. I totally agree with what your statement about evolution. But the way the debate has been framed in the last 100 to 150 years is that we have a very simplistic choice between taking the Bible absolutely literally, like I say, as a science description of, you know, a global flood in Noah's day that created all the geology and stuff like that, or we have to throw the Bible out and go with evolution. And my book was designed to say, you know, there is another alternative. If we go back and we look at the context, the historical context in which these people lived, in which they received the Bible, we don't have to necessarily read the Bible in our context first and impose our way of thinking on the scriptures. And so the idea behind the book was to help out Christians in the future who are going to be studying science, they're going to be studying all these different things, and they're going to go into an environment where people tend to think of Christianity as being opposed to scientific knowledge, scientific progress. And I think that that's some baggage that we carry from the history of Christian theology in the 20th century especially. But I try to open up that history a little bit and explain a bigger picture going all the way back for 2,000 years. And so my goal is to help people get around, if it's possible, get around this particular divide between what we call young earth creationism, the idea that God created everything instantaneously, exactly, you know, right around 6,000 years ago, or atheistic naturalistic evolution. There's really a third way, and the book is designed to explain that third way.
Sure, and I think it's super helpful, you know, when you talk about, I guess, anybody's ultimate mission as a Christian or, you know, of that faith is to really spread the word and to enable people to accept God or Christ, you know, and this is by no means a replacement for the Bible or anything like that. This is just kind of that bridge, you know, and it's something else. I mean, it really can help you understand, you know, and look at things in a different light. I think one of the best parts that I was able to read through, you know, is the part with Adam, of course, you know, after the forbidden fruit and whatnot goes on from there. But you talk about a biological death versus spiritual death.
That's a huge part of the debate.
You know, and you just go, wow, this all of a sudden makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can, you know, briefly, I don't know if you can actually briefly talk about that, but it's just throw that idea out there because it really made a difference in my mind.
Well, sure. All these stories fit together. The story of Adam is recapitulated or repeated in the story of Israel. Mm-hmm. And what you have with the story of scriptures at the very beginning, God's creation of a garden, God created a safe spot, a beautiful spot that he can enjoy life with his sons and daughters. Adam was his son. Eve was his daughter. And so you have a family story going on there. And we tend to think of the death penalty for disobedience there that's talked about in Genesis 2, and we see them, of course, falling in Genesis 3 and breaking God's command. We tend to think of the death sentence in terms of physical death. Mm-hmm. But if you read the scriptures the way Israel thought of death, they thought of themselves as dead when they were separated from God. And if you read the prophets, you'll start seeing that your sins separate you from God. So you have this repeat of the original Adam and Eve story. And so what I want to present work on the book, a couple chapters especially, was showing how biological death is not really at issue in the original garden scene. You have this separation, this covenant death, this relationship death, that their sins separated them from their father. And of course, the rest of the story of the Bible is about how God is going to reconcile himself to his children. Of course, that's where Jesus Christ comes in and does his ministry and his work of salvation for us and reconciles us now back to the presence of God. So we have a great relationship with God. We walk faithfully in his word and live the life that he has created us to live. So we're kind of back to the beginning again. Sure. That's the idea behind the original garden scene.
You know, and it was neat, though, because this, again, in my eyes was, as a reader, coming at the point where, you know, well, we know the story. I mean, obviously, so many of us do, but, you know, he says you will basically die, you know, if you eat that. And you just, I guess you don't put the thought into it maybe at the time that, you know, well, okay, he's going to take a bite of the apple, he's going to kill over, mm-hmm. you know, that
right.
he's just going to fall.
The command says, when you eat of it, you will surely die.
Right.
And of course, they were kicked out right away from the garden and separated from God. And I think if you follow through that thread all the way through the Bible, you'll see that it's really about covenant separation, death, mm-hmm. that relationship death that is being instituted there in Genesis 3. And then, of course, with redemption, Christ brings us back into relationship with God.
Sure. You know, I mean, ultimately, they didn't die right there on the spot. They died a biological death,
right.
you know, but there, technically, they did die.
Right.
That's spiritually.
That's right.
You know, it's, so, I mean, it really kind of cleared things up, and it makes sense, you know, and it's nothing that isn't really there.
Oh,
if you look at it, you know what I mean?
It's absolutely there, and it's absolutely real. I mean, sometimes in our materialistic culture, we tend to think of things that you can't see as not being real.
Right.
And so we've kind of drifted away from the mindset and the mentality of what was really real in the scriptures. So we're dealing with, again, we're dealing with modern conceptions, and we've kind of grown away from some of the mindset and the ways of communication that the people in the Bible understood very well. And so sometimes we have to kind of relearn those things to really make the most out of the Bible.
Sure. So we're going to take a quick break. Questions, comments, 494-7500. We're back right after this.
Having a medical provider who knows you and your family is the most important medical decision you can make. Having a medical provider who knows you and your family is the most important medical decision you can make. This medical professional is your health care partner. Please establish care. Make an appointment with a professional medical provider today. This is Kathy Russell, nurse practitioner at the Butte Community Health Center, 723-4075.
Dealing with the loss of a loved one can be overwhelming. That's why Dugan Dolan Mortuary offers funeral prearrangement and funeral trust. These services provide peace of mind in the time of need, so families can focus on what's important, the celebration of a life. Prearrangement helps make funeral decisions before need, while trusts are interest-earning accounts that help pay for funeral-related costs. Call 723-3239 today. Dugan Dolan Mortuary. We care.
No matter how far you may go, there's only one just down the road.
Down Pump!
Ooh, pump it up!
Pump it up!
Down Pump is proud to be a part of your community. On your next visit to Down Pump, check out the deli for great, delicious hot treats. Town Pub, Montana's best since 1953. And pleased to be a part of your hometown.
Right down the road.
Oh, yeah.
Please, join Safe Space in our mission to empower our community to live violence-free. This is Marcy Robinson, Women's Group Facilitator and Volunteer at Safe Space. April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. In conjunction with April, Safe Space is holding our fourth annual Take Back the Night on April 25th at 7 p.m. on the courthouse steps. This is a short program with community speakers, including Barbara Richard, a candlelight march to the Peace Park, and a potluck dinner following. Help Safe Space create peace. For more information about Take Back the Night on April 25th, call Safe Space at 782-9807 in Butte.
And we're back, your KBOW party line, 125, 53 degrees outside. Tim Martin joining us, of course, with his book, Beyond Creation Science. There's some artwork in the studio, which we're going to talk about down the road. Also, book signing coming up. Tim, there was a call on the line, so we're going to go ahead. We'll go there real quick. Good afternoon. You're on the party line.
Hi, Dan. This is Kevin Lowney. How you doing?
Good. Kevin, yourself?
Pretty good. Tim, is your guest name there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Tim. You know, I tend to agree with almost everything I've heard you say so far, but I wonder if you realize just one thing, and that is you're reinventing the wheel with this book. Catholic theologians have been saying the same basic premises in their understanding of biblical study for quite some time, and I might point out that they have the original sources of which the Bible was written from at their disposal, and they also have 2,000 years of quite in-depth study that they probably could add to your studies.
Sure.
And I don't really see you in disagreement with that, but the only problem I think I have is, you know, maybe you're reinventing the wheel,
okay,
and maybe not pointing people to
the truth
totally, the fullness of the truth.
Thanks for calling in. I guess you can just consider me then a missionary to the Protestants. How's that?
God forgive you.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I quote some old theologians, some church fathers in the book. We've got a lot of stuff from Eusebius, Basil, Athanasius, Augustine, Chrysostom, and I'm trying to open things up. Like I said at the beginning, I think that the Protestants can take a look at this old church history, because I grew up as a Protestant. I'll be honest with you, that's my heritage, that's where I come from, and that's the environment in which I
work. Church, by the way?
Well, I kind of come from a reformational background, kind of a reformed background.
Okay.
Although I wouldn't actually use that label now myself, but
sure,
my heritage in that, we've gotten to a point where we've forgotten that there is 2,000 years of church history.
Right.
And so my goal in this, as your missionary to the Protestants, is to open up the history a little bit, because we don't, I agree with you, the Catholics are much further along in this, and we talk about the geocentrism, geostationism debate in the book as well, and I think that the Catholics had to deal with some of these issues of
right,
scientific progress and how that interacts with the biblical text, you know, 500 years ago, whereas now
right,
Protestants are actually dealing with this
now,
the creation versus evolution debate and the divide, and now you've got intelligent design, which is a kind of a third option. So I guess I don't know what to tell you. I'm doing the work for you. I'm telling you, we're quoting all these old church fathers, and I love them. I wish everybody could read, you know, Athanasius and Augustine and Eusebius, all these guys, because they're just fantastic.
Well, I hope someday you call yourself a Catholic.
Well,
let me just add to that.
Okay.
And have the additional grace of the power of the sacraments behind your speech.
Sure.
Maybe you'll be one of our leaders someday.
Well, thank you for calling, Kevin. I tell you, my goal in writing this book is to solve problems, and I told Dan this earlier. We have some real problems in the church that need to be solved, and I'm all for looking for solutions.
Hey, can I just point out one thing in Genesis real quick?
Sure.
You know, and you realize this, I'm sure, but a lot of people don't, that there's two different creation stories in Genesis.
That's correct.
And on the first creation story, man is created after everything else.
That's correct.
The second creation story, man was created before everything else.
We talk about that in chapter 13.
So which means that the biblical authors were trying to put forth a scientific explanation of how the world came about. They disagree with themselves.
Right, right. And
so,
that's a neat point, because it's really neat to see how God is zooming in on a different look. And I think if we look at the story in terms of what God is doing with the story rather than a science textbook, we'll start seeing some really neat stuff in there.
What's the name of your book again?
Beyond Creation Science. And you can actually take a look on our website, beyondcreationscience.com, of what we've got. And also, we'll have the book available here in Butte as well.
Fabulous. Well, God bless.
Thank you, Kevin.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
And we are going to take a quick 2-minute timeout. Any questions? Again, comments, 494-7500.
When a loved one passes away, place your trust in Butte Granite Works. The professionals of Butte Granite Works take the time to listen to what you want. Butte Granite Works will offer many ideas, from the type of material you'll use to the design on the memorial marker. Once you've made your decision, they'll then create the perfect tribute to your loved one's life using their many years of experience. For custom engraved memorial markers, see the crew at Butte Granite Works, a name you can trust. 600 Sampson in Butte, or call 494-1600.
Highland Hearing introduces Delta, a designer hearing device for a new generation. It's ideal for those who don't want a traditional hearing device. It's discreet, lightweight, shape hides out of sight comfortably behind your ear, and the design is so cool. You'll want to show it off. Choose from a variety of colors and patterns that even match it to your skin or hair. Delta automatically adjusts to enhance the quality of speech to improve understanding. Call Highland Hearing 723-6600 to schedule an appointment for a free demonstration.
Wild West Plumbing!
Toilets overflowing, piping on the blowing, now it's time to call it Wild West.
If you have a plumbing problem, the first thing you should do is call Wild West Plumbing at 782-0407. Wild West Plumbing, you're happy today or you don't pay.
Toilets overflowing, piping on the blowing, now it's time to call it Wild West.
Formerly Gribbons Plumbing and Heating.
Knock, knock.
Okay, who's there?
Orange.
Yeah, Orange who?
Orange, you gonna take me out to dinner tonight?
Yeah, cute. Not if you're gonna make me eat chick food.
Don't worry. We can go to the Broken Arrow Steakhouse and Casino in Deer Lodge.
Ooh, that does sound good. I can get a fresh cut steak with all the trimmings and you can get chick food.
Just for that, I'm not going to share my dessert with you.
Okay, easy. Pasta and chicken are not chick food. Let's head to the Broken Arrow in Deer Lodge. And we're back, your KBOWQ party line, 132, 52 degrees outside, a gorgeous day in Butte, Montana. Tim Martin joining us this afternoon, again with his book, Beyond Creation Science. We've been learning a lot about, you know, I guess the basic ideas and principles behind the book. Tim, you know, one thing I wanted to look at also is some of the different terms, as I told you I was curious about. You know, there's a couple terms in there like young earth creationism, old earth. What are the two and what is the difference?
Well, they tend to be general terms, not necessarily specific, but young earth creationists tend to read the Bible very literally in the creation accounts especially, and they believe that God, like I said earlier, God created everything that we see today pretty much like it is now about 6,000 years ago. And so you have this this new young creation that we're living in. And they believe that evolutionists, because they do not believe in a global flood because of their unbelief, they've rejected the global flood which created all of the geology, according to the young earth creationists, that created all the geology to study the history of the earth and science, geology, all those different things. So young earth creationists tend to view the earth very young. They tend to have a global flood that created the geology that's underneath our feet now, and they tend to have a very literal or biological view of the death in the garden. So you do have that change right there. They believe that death was entered into all the universe as a result of Adam's sin. It's kind of like this sort of strange version of geocentrism, because back in the 1500s, people thought that the earth was the center of the universe. Mm-hmm. Well, now you've got the young earth creationists to believe that Adam was physically at the center of everything that God was doing. And so when Adam was cursed with the death penalty for his disobedience, you have this biological death that entered the world, and now we're waiting. The whole creation is groaning, I guess they would use that language from Paul, until the end of the world, in which God will make everything right. Now, we have a little different take on that, because we see the groaning creation in a covenantal sense, and we see what happened in the first century with Christ accomplishing his redemption and renewing the creation, the resurrection of the creation. So it's a little different terminology. Old earth creationists tend to have a few different views. There's a couple of different ways that they handle the biblical text, but they're generally accepting of the scientific evidence for a very old earth. And of course, they look at the geology and they come to quite different conclusions about how things got there and death and you know, fossils, those kinds of things. Old earth creationists, of course, believe that God created everything that we see today, but they don't necessarily say that God told us exactly the mechanics, the scientific detail of how he did it. So they leave that kind of more open. And on the further extreme, of course, you've got more atheistic Darwinists who say that everything that we see today happened as a random process of chance with matter collisions, and so there could be a materialistic view. Mm-hmm. So those are three kind of ways of going about it. These, of course, are very deep questions about how did the universe get here, and you know, where's it all going, and stuff like that.
Sure. You know, and it's, I guess there's, I'm all over the field here. I guess, and I don't know, maybe that's a common thing. I don't know if you run into that much, you know, about, I guess I don't know where I'd put myself per se, but, you know, it is, again, a matter of interpretation. There are some things, though, that you mentioned about a global flood, and there's a part, and granted I haven't been all the way through it in your entire book, but there's a part in there that's so gripping about the idea of maybe a localized flood.
Right.
That in a lot of ways, you know, makes sense.
Right. There's a couple different ways you can approach that. First of all, we have to go back and sort of look at the language of the account in original Hebrew. And I think a lot of people mistakenly go directly to the flood account in Genesis 6 through 9, and they basically impose their idea of Earth. The whole planet Earth was underwater, and they read their own modern concept of the Earth into the text. Well, you go back and you look at the text, and the Hebrew word there for Earth is eretz, or land. In fact, all through the Old Testament, it's also translated the land, like the land of Israel, the land of the Philistines, etc. Very same language. So the very first thing we have to do is look at the original language and that particular context, the way the language is used in the Old Testament. There's a couple other things that point us out with a flood as far as dealing with a limited event in their experience. It was universal in their experience, but their experience isn't the same experience that we have as moderns. First of all, you have a context set in Genesis 6 about who the flood was involved in. And it starts off with Genesis 6, talking about the sons of God who married the daughters of men. They were not keeping faithful God's covenant relationship with them, disobeying and marrying with foreign wives and stuff. And you see through Israel in the Old Testament when they sinned, they also married foreign wives like Solomon, who brought the downfall of the kingdom. And so you have this context there. God is wiping out his wrath for what they were doing, caused him to just want to start all over. And so you have this covenant judgment that took place, and the sons of God were wiped out, and you have Noah, the only righteous son of God left, starting in a new covenant world. And you can also go to the New Testament, and you can see this very same thing going on, because the judgment, the coming of the Son of Man, what Jesus was warning about in his ministry, was the apostasy of those who rejected him in the first century. And he talked about a judgment that was going to come upon them in that generation. It was going to wipe out everybody in that generation, in that context. And we have that happening with 70 AD when the Roman armies came in and destroyed the temple, destroyed Jerusalem. Jesus had told all of his disciples to, when they see Jerusalem surrounded by armies, to leave, and they would be saved, and of course. So we have this covenant context on both ends of the Bible with a flood, and then also you see with prophecy in the New Testament dealing predominantly with that contemporary event that Jesus prophesied about.
Sure. You know, and like I said, there's just some of the points, you know, that are made. I think people of all different walks can intelligently say, you know, maybe that makes some kind of sense right there. You know, I think that's neat, because from any, you know, religious standpoint, from a scientific standpoint, you just kind of go, like I said, again, wow.
Right. You got some weird things going on in the debate here as well, because young earth creationists say, well, it was a global flood. And this is, of course, what I'm trying to challenge here, is this young earth creationist view. But they'll say you have a global flood. So Noah takes all the animals from the whole planet Earth, a pair of everything that goes on the ark, survives the flood through the ark, but then you have basically everything repopulated from the limited contents that Noah took on the ark. Well, if you start thinking about how to do that, you start realizing that young earth creationists, in their zeal against evolution, against Darwinism, they end up having to have their own version of evolution for all these animals to repopulate the earth and, you know, make all these different kinds that we, you know, millions and millions of different kinds of animals that we see today. And so it's kind of weird, because you got this flip with this global flood and stuffing all of the animals that are alive today in a seed form on Noah's Ark, and then they come off the Ark and they have to interbreed, and things change after the flood. So you have this evolution going into from the pre-flood world to the post-flood world, and it's kind of a very strange situation where young earth creationists have to have evolution. Hyper-evolution happens very fast in order to make their system work, and just amazing ironies of history, I guess.
Well, you know, and it's something else. And they're like, you know, you look here, there's a part in the book where it says there's, what, 95% of the animals that have ever been on the planet are extinct.
Right.
You know what I mean? That almost spells to it. Again, you talk about at what point did we, you know, in terms of civilization, understand the world was round? I mean, you know, you're talking Ferdinand Magellan, you're talking Christopher Columbus times.
Right.
Before we even had any kind of idea.
Right. We tend not to realize that the way we think about things today is the end of a long progression of learning, a long progression of knowledge, a long progression of testing and things like that. And people have had these arguments. And I should say this about this particular debate that we find ourselves in today with evolution versus creationism. We're really not doing anything brand new, because there's been this interaction between scientific progress and the Bible and what Christianity teaches for thousands of years. You go back and you read Augustine talking about the antipodes and things like that we talk about in the book, the people on the other side of the planet. There's a big debate about that. There's debates about you know, various different aspects that we take for granted. Spherical Earth, for example. We take that totally for granted, as if everybody's always believed that.
Right.
Well, you go back and you read the history, it's not true. Not everyone has always believed that. That's been a process of learning, a process of discussing and arguing about things. And the things that we take for granted today, I think you're going to find out the things, the big issues that Christians think of today, 500 years from now, will probably be very small. Just like we look at, for example, Copernicus and the heliocentrism versus geocentrism debate. You know, that's just not something Christians argue about anymore. It's something that, you know, you see the sun, you see things move, and astronomy works just fine, accepting a very controversial view of the heavens at that point in time. Well, it's not controversial anymore. I think 500 years from now, you're probably going to see a lot of the stuff that we have today in that same light.
That makes sense. You know, it's just that rolling, you know, process, I guess, of education. You know, I gotta stop and just kind of ask you probably what will be a silly question that I'm sure you've had a million times. You know, when you talk about something like that, you know, the idea of maybe a localized flood, is this just kind of an idea? I mean, or have you researched and you know, is there something that we can read, maybe scripture wise or something that would allude to that?
Well, actually, the idea of a local flood is very well recognized, and if you go to ancient historians, people like Josephus, which a lot of people don't know who Josephus was. He was a first century historian. He was a Jew. He recorded the history of the Jews, and he also recorded the wars of the Jews, which was about the story of what happened in AD 70 with Romans. But if you go back and you read his old histories, you get very distinct impressions that he did not believe that every human being on planet Earth was destroyed by the flood. We've got that referenced in our book. There's other historians as well that take this sort of local view. But we live in a context, in a modern situation with Christians today, who have staked their tradition on a particular reading of the Bible. And so if you were to suggest to someone who was very, very dedicated to the global flood view and the young Earth creationism view, you're going to make them very uncomfortable by suggesting this. And so the idea behind the book and what we're trying to do was sort of reason through it in a non-confrontational way, sort of ask questions as we go through the book and sort of help people along, because you really do have a conflict within the wider culture that I think is unnecessary. It does not help Christianity to move forward and the kingdom of God to get better if you live with that contact in a perpetual state of war. So it's just an opportunity to see that there is another third way, and that's what the book was all about.
Sure. You know, and it's like, again, along those lines that makes this book available and readable by any walk of life. I mean, an atheist could pick up this book
and
just still go, wow.
Yeah, I think that you're going to see more sophistication on the Christian side. It's going to force more atheists to sort of take it more seriously, because up until this point, at least within the extreme debate part, the atheists can dismiss a young Earth as Christianity and be done with Christianity.
Sure.
And the idea is, say, well, there's a little more to the Bible here that I think we might have missed if we go back and put ourselves in that context and try to understand it in their shoes, in their sandals. and that perhaps this debate is entirely on the wrong foot from the very beginning. And then they have to actually deal with the real essence of Christianity, not perhaps a flawed interpretation. And that will be progress, because then atheists will have to really deal with substance and not like a straw man argument.
Sure.
That's the idea behind the book.
And it works. It does. So we're going to take another break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about the art, which I'm excited about. It's something else. So it's easy to explain art like this on the radio. So we're going to do it in good fashion. Of course, after the break, also talk about local book signing and picking up a copy. So we'll do that after this. Your KBOWQ Party Line.
Harrington Surgical Supply is your one-stop source for home health care, rehab equipment, and oxygen respiratory therapy equipment. They've been in business for over 50 years and offer complete and professional services to their customers, plus a wide line of surgical supplies like hospital beds, walkers, wheelchairs, diabetic supplies, grab bars, as well as respiratory equipment and oxygen delivery systems and sleep aid devices. Contact Harrington Surgical Supply at 723-6541 or see them at 53 East Broadway in Uptown Butte.
Gifts for young professionals. Hand engraved by Hoyle Jewelry, Anaconda.
Hola! From the spirited crew at Chances Are Casino and Malacque, Butte's authentic Mexican food restaurant. Enjoy your favorite Mexican dish with a margarita, daiquiri, or Mexican beer, and then stop by Chances Are Casino and join the Players Club. Every time you swipe your card, you'll get free credits to play. And remember, each half hour, the green machine randomly picks a Players Club member to go into the drawing for the pot of gold. Vamanos! Let's go to Chances Are Casino and Malacque in the Tamarack Square, Butte.
We are all hearing negative stories about the national real estate market. Hi, I'm Gary Shea, owner of Shea Realtors. Real estate markets are local, and every market is different. Most of the negative issues affecting some markets do not apply to our market, and the current interest rate environment is very attractive. This can open doors to tremendous real estate opportunities. I'd like to help you take advantage of these opportunities and make informed real estate decisions. Contact Gary Shea at 490-SHEA or visit our website, ShayRealtors.com.
Holy spring, run off that man!
It's created some very large and dangerous puddles, my little buddy. Perfect breeding ground for poison ivy's deadly fungi.
Batman, look out!
It looks like that sinister eco-terrorist poison ivy has struck again.
That puddle was a trap. Now the Batmobile is covered in toxic mold and it's indrivable.
Don't worry. J&C Body Shop can give us a free estimate. It'll fix the body and mechanical problems in no time.
J&C Body Shop off Harrison across from Staples and Butte.
And we're back, your KBOWQ Party Line, about 12 minutes in front of closing time. Tim Martin joining us this afternoon. Of course, we've been spending the majority of the hour talking about some of the substance, just some, might I add, of the substance in his book, Beyond Creation Science. We've merely chipped the iceberg, Tim, is the reality of it.
Well, thanks, Dan, for having me on. I sure appreciate the opportunity. And we can talk about the art now?
Yeah, you know, let's do that, because you said, well, I have some art I want to bring into you, Dan. I said, okay. You know, and I don't know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting what I got, and that's a good start.
Okay, well, When we were working on the book, as far as the theology behind the book, we started seeing patterns in Scripture that things are compared to each other. For example, in Luke 17, Jesus talks about the days of Noah, and he says, "So also will it be in the days of the Son of Man." And then he goes on, he says, you know, it was the same in the days of Lot. And so those stories all come from Genesis, Lot and Noah and those different things. And we understand that the coming of the Son of Man was fulfilled and with the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, which wiped away the old Mosaic administration of the covenant and fully unveiled the covenant of Christ. So we talked to this artist in Pennsylvania. We said, we'd like to have a piece of art that brings these three events together in sort of an interesting way. And what he did with us is he put this together. And if you pull up, if the audience has access to the website, they can pull up beyondcreationscience.com and they can see what we're actually talking about right now. But what we have in here is a scroll. It's a painting that's based on a scroll representing God's word. And on this scroll, we have three elements represented. In the background, we have Sodom being represented, the story of Sodom back in Genesis, and Sodom is on fire. And then in the foreground, we have the temple, Herod's temple, represented, and Noah's Ark. And basically, you have this flood going on, and it's basically inundating the temple, and Noah's Ark is on a collision course with Herod's temple.
Right.
And so we bring these three elements that Jesus talks about in Luke 17 together in sort of an apocalyptic way. And what I mean by apocalyptic, people tend to think of the word apocalyptic as the end of the world, mm-hmm. but actually the word actually means unveiling or revelation. That's where we get the word for the revelation of John. So the idea behind the art was to show visually the essence of the argument of the book in a visual, artistic way. And so it is pretty striking. I mean, we have it on the cover of the book as well. And what we'll do is I'm scheduled to have a book signing at Hastings in Butte on this coming Saturday between 1 o'clock and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And I will have the art there for those people who want to come see the art. They can come take a look at the book. Hastings has the book on sale right now. But that was the idea behind the art. We actually had two pieces done. We have the scroll painting here in the studio. I didn't bring our front cover painting, but the same basic elements of Sodom, Noah's flood, and Herod's temple is also represented in the smaller piece, which serves as our front cover on the book.
Sure. You know, and I am a big art fan, you know, a very artistic kind of person. This truly is one of my absolute favorite. I mean, honest to goodness, to this day, one of my favorite pieces. It's incredible. I mean,
His name was James Robert Kessler. He lives in Pennsylvania. He actually has a website where he does. He does this for a living. He does the art for a
sure.
living. So you can actually take a look at his website, inchristvictorious.com, all one word. And you know, we just started bouncing ideas off each other. And I sent him an old copy of the book, the old edition of the book. He read it, and saw kind of exactly what we were thinking. So we were on the phone one day, and he says, "You know, I think I'll park Noah's Ark right in the courtyard of the temple and flood the whole thing."
Right.
It was just fantastic, you know. So we had a lot of fun with the art. The art actually took almost as long to do as the writing of the manuscript. The art took almost a year to do that piece right there.
You know, and you can tell that through detail first and foremost, because there's nothing, you know, no stone left unturned in terms of detail.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it's so realistic.
Right.
I mean, it looks like a picture.
Yeah.
Like if I were standing, you know, I don't know where I'd be standing at this kind of angle, but
you know,
The
first time I saw this, I unveiled this piece of art at the conference I spoke at last year, and the first time I saw this, you know, I just stood in front of it, and it was like it just pulled me right into the middle of that.
Yeah, you bet.
You know, it's almost like it's just mesmerizing. So I just really appreciate Jim's work. He does a bunch of other stuff too, and we've been the best of friends through this project, and we remain good friends today. And so it's just a lot of fun, you know, do this kind of work and then see this kind of reward at the end. It makes all the work worthwhile. So if anybody wants to come see the art, we will have it displayed right there in Hastings in the lobby, right in the front door, on Saturday from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m.
Okay, and they can also pick up a copy of the book then.
That's correct.
And you'll sign it.
Yes, I will be there. Be happy to talk to him about it and go from there.
Very good. One more thing about the art, you know, and I just noticed this as we started talking about it again, and maybe I'm noticing nothing, but is there, above here, is there a face there? Intentionally?
I don't think so. You know, Jim and I talked about doing a lot of stuff like that. I kind of see what you're talking about. Right. I don't know that he intended. We talked about doing some other things, too. We talked about having a rainbow, like an inverted rainbow, sort of going down in the water and coming back up, sort of reflecting off the sky, because the rainbow is kind of the big part of the story
sure.
of Noah's flood. So, you know, we talked about adding those kind of elements, and he got to the point where he said, you know, if I add anything else, I'm worried I'm going to screw it all up.
Right. Well, there really is, you know, so much in there. But again, kind of, you know, coming back to the book signing, everything else, outside of the book signing, you know, down the road, maybe we won't be able to make it this weekend. Are there resources where we can learn more? You know, can we check out the website again, or can we order this from any local bookstore, Amazon, anything like that?
Right. We do most of our sales off of the website, and actually Hastings has a better deal right now. So
okay.
That would be a place to pick up the book. They carry it right now. It's on their shelf, and we'll have more copies on Saturday. But on our website, we have a lot of related material, some recordings and stuff. I've also spoken at conferences over the last few years, so we have some of those conference presentations up on the website. And that website is beyondcreationscience.com. And you can see the art there visually represented on the website as well. So I did invite the audience, those who are interested in looking at this issue and sort of the ramifications of this debate, to take a look at the website.
Sure. What is the price of such a thick book?
The retail price off the website is $25.
Incredible.
And the Hastings price, I believe, is $19.99. So you're saving on shipping, and it's less expensive. So we'll have as many copies there as we need.
Wonderful. So head on down this Saturday. You can throw out your times at me again, Tim.
1 o'clock p.m. is when we start, and we'll be there till 4 o'clock p.m.
Okay, very good. Have we missed anything you want to throw out there?
No, this has been a great show. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah,
appreciate
thanks
it.
For coming down. Hopefully you'll write another one.
Well, that was a big project. I'm going to have to recharge some batteries or something for a while.
We'll talk to you in a decade, maybe. Okay. Give you a couple of years. All right. Tim, again, I appreciate your time today.
All right. Thank you very much, Dan.
Friends, we'll wrap it up. Your KBOQ party line after this.